thanks for taking time out of your day to join us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Coming up in just a few minutes, I have a special Clarkrageous moment, a full ripoff alert about a quote-unquote service being offered maybe by your bank that you need to run from before your money runs away from you. I'll fill you in. And later, I want to talk about all the ways that people are using our face now to do business with us rather than passwords or anything like that. And I want to tell you the ups and downs, the goods and the bads of that. So I wanted to mention to you that with the ongoing disputes we have with China about trade and the various tariffs that are taking place, it's creating real issues for retailers. And I was in a Sam's Club recently, and I'd never seen so many TVs in any store in my life. The Sam's Club I was in had TVs stacked everywhere. And it seemed to me, and it's just my guess, I have nothing to back it up with, that they, in order to avoid paying tariffs on a lot of TVs, pre-ordered a much larger number of TVs than maybe they would normally have, because, I mean, it was crazy. It looked like enough TVs to have one for every homeowner in a mid-sized town. There were so many TVs of every size and description. And so for American retailers, the ongoing trade dispute with China is a really, really difficult thing because they don't know how to play it. You know, for that Sam's Club with the zillion TVs, as TV prices, as with electronics, they continually go down. Buying all those to try to beat tariffs, if that is in fact what they were doing, is likely not the greatest idea. But when there's an X factor, like an ongoing trade skirmish that could turn into a full war, you know, what do you do as a business? And it does disrupt. In the recent meeting with a financial analyst, the CFO of Costco Wholesale said that they were expecting that there were a number of items inside their warehouses they were going to have to raise prices on or lose money on because of the ongoing issues with tariffs. And the dollar stores face the greatest challenge. Dollar Tree is looking at possibly having to segregate their stores. They're testing it now. And Dollar Tree has always, you know, they have the big sign for Dollar Tree. And then underneath it, it says, everything's a dollar. Well, they're about to have to put an asterisk there or add to it, everything's a dollar, just kidding. Because with the tariffs, Dollar Tree is testing what they call Dollar Tree Plus. So in the stores, everything's a dollar, except in the section they have cordoned off that's Dollar Tree Plus, that is whatever it's going to cost. And Dollar General has said that the issue of tariffs is going to affect their prices as well. Tariffs are often promoted by politicians as being a tax on the country that whose goods the tariffs are being imposed on. But the reality with tariffs is it's a tax on the people in the country where people buy the goods. And that's just the way it is, regardless of how you feel about actions that we're taking against China. The fact is that somebody's got to pay, and it's you and me as consumers that will have to pay the price for hopefully a better trading relationship with China. Now, the disruptions with what's going on with China have led to the lowest airfares I've ever seen for travel, particularly from the U.S. West Coast to China, with, as an example, earlier today, and they're still available right now, fares from the West Coast to Beijing dropped to 360 round trip for travel this fall. Now, that would be like traveling from, let's say, Charlotte to Washington for $12 or something. If you start thinking about the distance that's involved flying from the West Coast of the United States to Beijing, there are also deals that are slightly more expensive to Shanghai. This is a real opportunity. Always when there's turmoil, there's various forms of opportunity. And this is an example where if you like to travel, there's going to be great, great deals. The Chinese currency, what they call the people's money, I guess, the renminbi, has been dropping in value, which means that you can go to a big Chinese city and stay in a five-star hotel in many cases for less than $100 a night. So, maybe it's famine at Dollar Tree, but feast for you if you like to travel. Rick is with us on the call. Oh, if you want to find those fares, sorry, Rick. If you want to find those fares, go to google.com/flights. And again, West Coast departure points, really. So you'd have to, if you live elsewhere in the country, you take a cheap domestic ticket to the West Coast to then be able to take those cheap tickets to China. Go to google.com/flights and pull up a fare calendar starting in September, and you'll see these really, really cheap prices. Rick is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Rick. Sorry for the delay.
Oh, no. How you doing, Clark? Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. So, Rick, you had quite a medical scare, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a heart attack and ended up with quadruple bypass surgery about 10 months ago or 9 months ago.
How do your health prospects look now?
Oh, my heart's stronger than it's ever been. My output is exemplary, and they don't need to see me back for 3 years. So,
how great is that? I mean, there you had something that used to mean the equivalent of, you know, you were either going to die right then or die soon after. And here you are with a new lease on life.
Yep.
Well, good. Well, how can I be of service? Because it sounds like that's all great news.
Well, yeah. With that new lease on life comes a hefty bill, though.
Oh.
I went to one hospital and I got transferred to another. So I've got bills from two different hospitals and full sets of all the different doctors at both the hospitals, two sets of ambulance rides, and you name it. So, and all the bills add up to about $750,000. Now, I've got great insurance, and my maximum out-of-pocket's about $6,000. And I wouldn't be calling you if it was all $6,000 to one place. I'd just call them up and make arrangements and make payments and be done with it. But the way insurance works and the way they file it, and these bills have been changing, and over the last, it took about 6-7 months for them all to get processed through and insurance paid their amount and rewritten to the amount that I owe. And now I've got about 20 bills that have all gone into collection that add up to that $6,000. The smallest one is like $25, which if I'd have known about it, I would have just paid it, but it came in collection last week. And then the biggest one is about $2,500. So my question to you is, now that I've got a new job and a lot less stress in my life and got caught up because I didn't have any long-term or short-term disability, but so I had big setbacks, but now I'm ready to start attacking these medical bills, you know, in a financial manner. So my question is, how do I go about doing that to have the least negative impact on my credit rating by now that they've all gone into collection? Do I deal with the collection agencies directly?
Yeah, so let me tell you the story providers. That's unusual with medical. That medical, generally, when you pay those bills, that item will not reflect on your credit the way if you fell behind on a bill to your credit card company or something like that, or your car loan or anything else. Medical debt is looked at differently in the new credit scoring models. So you don't have to be terribly anxious or worried about it. I want to make sure that we don't add anxiety or stress in your life, because it's important that you not have that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So with anybody you're going to pay, how much money are you in a position of the $6,000 to pay, let's say, in the next month?
In the next month, very little. So I need to contact most of the different providers and make arrangements.
Exactly.
Or the credit companies and make arrangements. And that's where I don't know which way to go. The providers
don't agree to anything. If they've been turned over to a collection agency, that's who you'll need to deal with. But don't agree to anything with any collection agency that you don't believe you can live up to, number one. Number two, the collection agencies will typically ask you for your checking account routing numbers as part of whatever agreement you reach with them. Do not give them access to that.
Okay.
And a suggestion
I had. Debit card?
No, a suggestion that I got from someone who is a collection attorney after I've talked about this, I thought was really smart because it ties in with something else I've talked about. Setting up a separate checking account at a different bank than you normally do business, and you only keep on deposit with it the money that you are designating to pay on these collections. Does that make sense?
Not so to give out the routing numbers.
Well, you can give it out from that account,
but
not from your regular checking account, because then there are dishonest collection agencies that will just come in and grab whatever they want. So if you have a separate checking account that has only the money in it that you know you can meet your agreements you've reached, they have access to that, they're never going to be able to really cause you any great distress or harm. But you never pay anybody until you have an agreement in writing on the payment plans you're going to have with these collection agencies.
Now, does that include even the smaller ones that I might be paying in full?
Go ahead. If you're paying them in full, go ahead and just do those. Get those out of the way. Then you have a smaller number of collection agencies you have to deal with anyway. And the best news that you have recovered so well, and that is what's really exciting. It's time for today's Clark Regis moment. This one is very important, significant for you to be aware of. Please listen to this and take action on it.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clark Regis moment.
You, with your bank, and if you have their app on your phone, likely have on your phone app for your bank something called Zelle. Zelle is a bank attempt that was a co-op to deal with the competitive threat that they faced primarily from Venmo at the time, and now many others that have these methods where you can send cash to a friend. The example that I give most often that's tired, but I'll give it because it makes sense. Bunch of people go to dinner together. One of them wants to earn points on their card. And so when they split up the check, the friends just Venmo the person who paid for their portion of the meal, and everybody settles up basically instantly. Venmo has become intensely popular, particularly with people in their 20s and 30s. Well, the banks saw a massive competitive threat from this, and they started their own app called Zelle. And Zelle is wrapped inside a bank's own ecosystem. The problem is, and it's what I have talked about the vulnerabilities for a long time, now there's a new NBC News report about people who are losing thousands of dollars. In addition, we are dealing with a number of people who've contacted us who criminals have been able to tap in through their bank app, steal money using the Zelle function out of their accounts, and they have not been able to get money back from their banks. Now, NBC News, after contacting banks, suddenly banks were giving people their money back. But this is a terrible problem where the Zelle app function does not have normal consumer protections, and a criminal hacking in is able to run off with unlimited sums of money, and if you have overdraft on your account as well, you get stuck not only with your money being gone, but now a loan that you owe to your bank. So the reality is the banks need to put up better protection on Zelle, both from the fraud standpoint and clear contractual rules that will protect your money with 100% fraud protection. The banks, again, did not think this through. All they were trying to do with Zelle is fight off a non-bank competitive threat. They weren't thinking about you. They were just thinking about themselves with very harmful consequences to you. What I recommend until the banks get their act together is that you delete the use of Zelle. Do not use Zelle. Do not have it activated on your account. If it is activated, you need to deactivate it, whatever procedure your bank requires to do so. And this is absolutely crazy that consumers are being harmed to such a great degree. One other thing from the NBC report, be very careful. Criminals are sending or doing phone calls to you with the caller ID showing up from your bank saying that there's been a problem with fraud on your account. They need to verify your account and that they've sent you a one-time use text with a code. We're used to those. What is the one-time use code that you got? The criminals then use that to take over your account and empty all the money. Do not give anybody who calls you that code. They're not from your bank. Glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas so you can keep more of what you make. And Clark.com's our main website. You're looking for deals? Maybe you're going to buy some stuff for somebody for Father's Day or for yourself. On ClarkDeals.com, we have a continually updated section on deals that are geared towards Father's Day gifts. So, I don't know if you heard, but the feds lost control of a lot of photos of Americans, and they've lost, you know, the Customs and Border Protection people take images of people, your faces, and they do it at border crossings, they do it in airports, and they have lost the digital information that is now in the hands of hackers on an undetermined number of people. They know it's at least 100,000, but they don't know in total how much of this has gone and what people may have done with it who have this. So the feds have enormous amounts of visual on us, facial recognition on us, and this is unsettling. And when you think about what JetBlue and Delta are up to, where they both now are rolling out the use of facial recognition as the way you proceed through airports, Delta in Atlanta and one of the concourses in Atlanta, and JetBlue at New York's Kennedy Airport. And so it's much more convenient as a passenger because you just flow right through based on the facial recognition. But the problem is, and the question, what happens with our digital image? What happens with our digital information? Not just from hackers, but what happens with it next? Who has access? What do they do with it? Well, China is way ahead of us in this area. And this is pretty amazing. I read a story in the Wall Street Journal that a Chinese insurance company is now scanning the faces of its customers and uses it as a way to decide if the customer is an honest person or not, based on artificial intelligence characteristics that they believe they can use the AI to figure out based on your face, how it moves, the wrinkles it has in it and all that, the expressions that your face gives off, whether you are a liar or an honest person. How about that? And also in China, the way you pay so many places now is with your face. You just walk up to a register and it scans your face, knows who you are, green light, says go, and you're done and you're out. So the technology is out there. We don't have any real rules, laws, safeguards in place, but it is certainly coming. And I think it's really important that we do have proper precautions in place. You know, in a dictatorship like China, with absolute control by the Red Army and the Communist Party, people have no expectation that they have any ability to have any sense of privacy. I believe we have a different attitude and opinion in our free society. Terry is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Terry.
Hey, Clark. Longtime listener and second time called in over the years.
Well, great to have you here a second time. What's going on with you, Terry?
Well, my wife and I, we have a new home we built in one of your favorite cities, St. Augustine, Florida. And
so you know that St. Augustine is so hip and in right now. So, so you set the trend that everybody wants to be there now?
Well, we don't want everybody coming down. We still want to keep it a little bit of a secret.
I think that ship has sailed on you.
Yeah, I know. I think so, too. But the reason why I was calling was we're trying to determine with our homeowner's insurance whether or not it's necessary, and if necessary, how much to get an umbrella insurance policy. In the past, we had a $1 million policy with homes that we had up in Missouri. And then we upped it to $2 million. But I was curious what your feelings are, and then how do you gauge what you, if you do an umbrella, that how much you should carry?
Great question. So the reason for carrying an umbrella, and for people who don't know what that means, it's not one that protects you from the rain. It is an excess liability policy that protects your wealth that you built up over the years. Someone who owes everybody money and has no assets has no need for an umbrella. At the other extreme, somebody who over the years has accumulated quite a bit of assets, money, whatever, possessions, and carries little or no debt, has a strong need for an umbrella policy, because one incident without proper liability coverage could wipe you out. So the likelihood that something will happen in your life that would cause you to have a judgment against you for $1 zillion is very, very low. And so that's why umbrella policies for what you get are really amazingly cheap per $1 million of coverage. But if anything ever happened, you're really happy you have that policy. So having set that background, in your case, do you need to buy one because of what I label the success tax, that you have things and don't owe money?
Yeah, I think we do fall in that category.
So then that's why an umbrella policy is valuable. Now, there's a lot of disagreement about how much coverage you should have. As kind of a general guess, I won't call it a rule, although I have called it that in the past, the amount of assets that you have that are uncovered assets kind of set a general vicinity of how much of an umbrella you should have. I've been told by an agent that that is bad advice and that you should have twice as much umbrella coverage as the assets you have. And I don't know how he came up with that number. But the idea is that if you have a lot of possessions or money and owe basically no money, you are the perfect candidate for an umbrella policy. And they're cheaper by the millions you add. You know, each million you add is cheaper than the one before, typically.
Yeah, that's what we've seen.
So I'll let you guess how many millions you might want.
Sure. Okay.
Does that help?
That helps tremendously. Great. Thanks so much, Clark.
All right. And enjoy your new life in Florida versus Missouri.
You have to come down and see us. And I thought your daughter was going to go to Flagler at one time. So
no, well, both my daughters went to visit Flagler College in St. Augustine, and the older one went somewhere else, and the younger one is at college in California. And I don't know that she's ever going to leave California except to go visit somewhere. I think she's a California kid now. Kathy's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a little bit of a challenge. I have a daughter who's going to be going to her second year of college and is renting a studio apartment in the college town. It's about 1,600 miles away. And, of course, one option is for us to go up there, and it happens to be the week after Labor Day when she's allowed to move in, and buy everything there and stock her studio. We can buy stuff online. We've looked at that. But the reality is she has some things from home and she has some personal possessions that she really would like to be part of her new life up there. And I would love to rent something one way to get her up there because I certainly don't want to do a 1,600-mile trip home by myself. So we've looked at the you pack and then they drive kind of opportunity, but those are like $1,500. We've looked at renting a car, that's about, or a big car, right? An SUV, but that's like $1,200. And then I don't even know what I would do with all the seats inside because I really need the cargo space. We've looked at renting a truck or a cargo van, but they can't rent them out this far. They don't know if they'll have one available. I'm just trying to figure out if there's
other options. All right, so let's talk about the third option closer to when your daughter goes off to college. What part of the country or what city is she going to college in?
She's going to Boston.
Oh, that's to your advantage.
Why is that?
Well, so there are areas of the country that are depopulating and other areas that are growing. So as an example, if you need a moving truck, you know, one of those you rent like a U-Haul kind of thing, and you're going, they all use what's known as yield management, where they base the price on where they need a truck, where they don't need a truck.
Right.
And so if somebody is moving from Texas to California, most of the time a rental truck one way is going to be much cheaper from Texas to California than it is from California to Texas. That's because more people are leaving California and tons of people are moving to Texas. So if you're doing the reverse, the truck's cheaper. So if you're going from anywhere outside the Northeast or New England to the Northeast or New England, trucks usually will be cheaper because they need them there for all the people that are leaving to move to the South, the Southwest, or the West.
Okay.
So you may find that you're so wanted for that rental truck to get it to Boston that you might get a really great deal. Are they telling you they'll quote you 45 days out?
They're telling me they'll quote me 60 days out, 60? But they're also telling me it's going to be over $1,200. So
well,
it's not that much cheaper.
Well, that's right, why I would talk to all the one-way truck rental companies.
Okay.
Because their demand is different company to company, and their sophistication with the yield management pricing is different company to company. So you may find a deal as you call around. Now, if you're going to pay that much money for a studio apartment, you can probably furnish it, not have to drive that truck, and furnish a studio more cheaply in Boston. I mean, even going to IKEA or buying stuff used, because furniture used goes for like nothing.
Yep. We've looked at that as an option. There's just some personal things she'd like to take. So.
Well, but when she finishes school, she can have those personal things.
There you go.
See, that's that gives her a lure why she'd want to move back to the town she's from, instead of saying, you know, I love being in Boston.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. But just like your daughter, my child has found her place and it's not here. So
she's going to be in New England forever. And maybe a couple of winters in New England will change her mind.
Possibly.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck with it. But I think of the options you've explored so far, if you are really good at shopping around, I think the rental truck will end up being the best deal.
Super. Thanks for the advice.
Okay. Best to you. And Adam is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Clark.
How's it going?
It's going good. I wanted to tell you two quick things before I ask my question, and that is, number one, I credit you in helping me set up 529 plans for both of my children. Some years ago, when my kids first started going to school, I checked out your resources on a recommendation from a colleague, and we set up a plan in Utah, which I think is still on your most recommended list.
Yeah, the Utah plan is great. It just should come with lift tickets for every so many dollars you put in.
Yeah, so I want to recommend to all your listeners that if you're starting to research 529s, that your website and your resources are highly recommended.
Well, thank you.
And the other thing is, I'm a big fan of YouTube, big watcher of YouTube videos, as are my kids and a lot of people these days. And I'm glad that you set up a YouTube channel, and I watch your content on there all the time. And I want to encourage you to keep using it as much as possible, because I think your fan base will grow the more you use that YouTube.
Okay, I appreciate that suggestion.
So my question is about credit scores. I have almost a 50-point difference between my score as it's listed on one of the credit services than the other two. I get a monthly email from this credit service that gives me updates on my credit background, on my credit score once a month. And when I got that,
is this Credit Karma or Credit Sesame we're talking about?
USAA has something called Credit Check. By being a USAA member, I automatically get enrolled in their Credit Check program. And I got an email telling me the other day that my credit score on Experian was 731, that I was very happy about. But then when I logged on to Credit Karma, they used TransUnion and Equifax, and my credit score was 682, which is not bad, but almost a 50-point difference, which made me really scratch my head. Now, I know these aren't official credit scores, but I'm just wondering how that can happen.
There's different data on each report. I'm looking right now. I just signed into my Credit Karma, and there's a 25-point difference right now between what TransUnion shows for me under the method that Credit Karma uses to generate a score and what Equifax shows for me. And so it's not unusual to have that. And there will also be differences in the scoring models as well. So I'm looking right now, and when I look on, I signed into one of my credit card accounts that shows me a FICO score on my account. And it shows yet a third score different from the other two. So it's part of the thing is that these scores are, it's kind of like playing horseshoes, that you're getting a general direction. And what I would say, if there's that much difference, as you just stated, go to annualcreditreport.com and get a copy of that credit report. It'll be free, that you got from USAA. Look what's on that credit report. See if there's something on there that's a problem, something that's inaccurate, that's leading to your score being, that's an important difference, and having that score in the 600s. You need to see what's causing that versus the others in the 700s, and maybe you'll find what that discrepancy is. Let me know. It's time for Clark.com/ask. That's where you post a question for me on our website, and then producer Joel asks it for you.
All right, Clark. Bruce says, I want to get my grandchildren a bond or something that they can't cash in for years. What do you suggest?
So I'm not a fan of bonds these days because of the way the bond program has changed. What I would do is buy them a long-term CD. You're the custodian of the account. You control the account till they're well into adulthood. And for now, a long-term CD would be a better call than doing a bond. That may change, but that's it for now. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.